हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसदि गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। So Sri Paramahamsa Adhyayana 4 Adhikarma 2, the Lord's actions are without hatred or prejudice. Okay. Page 48. When the Lord desires to enjoy pastimes with the devotees, having a variety of qualities and moods, vichitrasu, he creates sattva. When he desires to rest after meeting with them, Maya Shakti creates tamas. All the actions of the creation, maintenance, and destruction are for the devotees. This is accepted in Sasar Joch Chavan Chava Chanyadya Sva Mataratma Prasiddhaye. He creates higher and lower so they can worship Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.3.3. The commentary of Sridhar Swami says, why does he create? For perfecting Prasiddhaye, the Jiva, Atma, by having him worship the Lord, Swamatra. Sleeping refers to Yoga Nidra of the Purushavatar on the ocean of Pralaya, and sometimes refers to the Lord resting in the Jiva. Though the Supreme Lord sometimes refers to the Lord residing in the Jiva. Though the Supreme Lord resides in all jivas as the Antaryami, he does not remain out of attachment. He resides in the devotee, however, out of attachment to the devotee. Since his associating with the jiva, just as Antaryami, is not his desire, the explanation just given is preferable. Right, so, in other words, he doesn't desire to be in the heart of the living entity because he doesn't desire that there's a material creation. But the living entity, they want everything. So that's why it says that the material creation is sustained by the jivas, because they're the ones who are interested in the mundane, activities not connected with the Lord. Because as far as the Lord is concerned, then it's the ananda of interacting with all the devotees in his various pastimes. That's his interest. And so these other aspects where he's not involved, like that's not his interest. That's not his idea. So yeah. But it says for the devotees that he's there because he likes to be there, because then the jiva, when they're performing their activities in context of him, then that is where then he sees that now it's favored. So Gita says, all entities are within me, but I am not in them, and the living beings are not in me. See my inconceivable power, Bhagavad Gita 9.4.5. But those who worship me with devotion are in me, and I am in them, Bhagavad Gita 9.29. So his point is that, I mean, he's there in the heart, I am theirs and they are mine. This is an emotional aspect in which the Lord is then establishing that position of him as the servant of the Lord. I mean, it means that Jiva is the servant of the Lord. And so then in that position, when they have that relationship with the Lord, then you see that that personal aspect, then you can say there's that sense of possession, that interaction, and those aspects of that. There's also, so it's interesting, Gita, in one, they're all within me, but I'm not in them. living entities are not in me. So how, you know, this is his inconceivable power, how he can do that. But at the same time, then you see later in the same chapter that he says that my devotees, they are in me and I am in them. But it is said in the Hari Bhakti Shudodaya, Bhakkanam Ridayam Shantam Sashiro Me Priyam Griham Vasami Tatra Shobhaiva Vaikuntha Kyari Varnana. I reside in the gentle hearts of the devotees who are my dear house as well as Lakshmi's. Those hearts have the beauty of Vaikuntha. Anucheda 103. So you see, he's in everyone's heart, that because the devotee interacts with him, he reciprocates. The demons, he's also in their heart, but they only deal with him in the context of how he manifests as the material energy. So then they deal with the various aspects of material energy accordingly. And so you see, on certain levels, they follow everything very nicely. But as long as they see it's for their benefit. If it's not, then they may break the laws of nature and that. And so that's the whole point. That's what makes them demons. One is that it's atheistic. And at the same time, they only follow the laws of God only in as much as they get the benefits from it. Anucheda 103. Again, maintenance is presented in order to explain creation and destruction related to it. Then the topic is summarized. O King, the Supreme Lord, creator of a real universe, manifests time, which acts as a cause, which moves along with Prakriti and Jiva. O King, the Lord as time, friend of the Devatas, increases the Devatas and Sattva by the Lord's influence and destroys the demons inimical to them, who are covered by Rajas and Tamas. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.11.12. The Lord who manifests real actions for the supreme goal through the play of his Sarup Shakti, Satyakrit, manifests Sri Jati, time, a form of his action. What does time do? It acts along with a combination of Prakriti and Jiva for manifesting the creation to assist the sadhaka devotees related to the avatars. And by proximity, time is the cause of manifesting Ashrayam, the conditions of Prakriti and Jiva. O King Narada Deva, when you perform some major action by your efforts, other lesser actions are also automatically fulfilled. Time works. So the time is manifesting the, or how you say, the environments in which the Lord and the devotees can interact in pastimes. That's the primary aspect of time. The secondary aspects of the creation and destruction of those activities that are not in, in the Lord's personal pastimes, then those are just side things. They come along with it. So it's not that that's the main thing. We'll think that, you know, the creation, the destruction, those are big things. We don't think much of maintenance. But for Krishna, the whole material world, the maintenance is there for interacting with the devotees, because it's said, when he thinks of pastimes with the devotees, then he manifests sattva, right? That was the point. When Lord desires to enjoy pastimes with the devotees, having a variety of qualities and moods, vichitrasu, he creates sattva. So sattva includes all those varieties of moods and situations and all those things that rasa can take place. And so that's the actual main thing. Because in the spiritual world, just the mode of goodness is all that's there. Passion, ignorance is not there. There's no need, because you don't have demons that you have to create and destroy things. So the variety is already included in sattva, right? So when we think of passion, that's creating for desire. It means according to our desire, we're creating things. You know, and because, you know, we're in the process of creating, then there must be the opposite, there must be the destruction. So those two go together. But sattva, then on its own, is we see in the spiritual platform, is self-sufficient in that it is manifesting all these different things. And so when he wants to rest or do other things like that, then, you know, actions are performed, then that's what creates here the other modes. So we see Shuddha Sattva already has everything already within it. But when it comes to the material world, then you see it as three separate modes. So in the spiritual world, then all three of those aspects, those features of sattva, then are perfectly reconciled. But in the material platform, then they're separate entities, you know, separate features that they don't function together. You can't have creation and destruction at the same time. But you're either creating or you're destroying or you're maintaining. But there they can be having the maintenance is there, the wonderful actions in the pastimes, they may take some rest in the pastimes. And so all these things can go on together. It's not a problem. So yeah, time with action as its form, right? So time, so how do you know time? You see action. So if there's an action, that you know is time. Because it means like we see is time, is how much is calculated, the smallest amount of time is what does it take for a ray of sun to pass over an atom, right? So that's, so we can see its movement is the whole thing. So time is the potency which is manifest, you can see as action. Right, so you have the resting, you have the action, and then you have the experiences that are there. So when he wants to perform the pastimes, he creates the sattva, and so then that takes care of everything. The material platform, then here it's a matter of the mood of my duties and peace and things like that, and then you perform action for results that you want for your own benefit or others. So then passion will come up. And then ignorance will just be, you know, the sleep, the not knowing things, destruction, you know, all these, you know, negative aspects. But in the spiritual world, then there's no negative aspects. They're resting there and all the things that they don't create any anomalies like it does here. Time with action as its form increases the devata's predominance. Increases the devatas predominated by sattva and decreases praminoti, the demons who are hostile to the devatas. Pratyani khan, and who are predominated by rajas and tapas. Time protects the devotees among the devatas and decreases the enemies of the devotees among the demons. That was previously explained. Since it was explained that time was the representation of the Lord's action as the empowered one, Ishita, time increases devatas and decreases the demons. O king, the same meaning as before is indicated. So then a question comes up. The Lord has no goal. Why does he sometimes not make the demons his friends and fight with the devatas? End quote. The Lord is affectionate to devotees who exist among the devatas, surapriyaha. Among the devatas predominated by sattva, because of the general loyalty to the Lord is attracted to them. Sometimes when they commit offense to Brihaspati and others, their devata nature becomes covered by contamination. Then those persons among the devatas are not favored by the Lord. This was explained in Srimad Bhagavatam 7.18. So yeah, so it's not whimsical. It's a matter of reciprocation. The devotees are surrendered to the Lord, and so he's attracted by that. He interacts. The demons aren't. So why would he be there? Because if you're just saying, oh, but then they're thinking of like in the mode of ignorance. There's no meaning to it. It's not following any rules. It just happens by chance. You know, these are all the demoniac philosophies. You know, so then they come up with these things. So then they're going to naturally think in the same way. You know, well, why can't it be like this? You know, but why would you want it like that? You know, you interact with those who are favorable. That's the natural tendency. Okay. Yes. Alidar is going to say something. No. Okay. Then the next question. Why do the demons not follow the devotees? End quote. Because they have no taste. Since Rajas and Tamas, Rajas Tamas Khan, because extreme rejection of the Lord, right? So they don't have a taste for following the devatas or following the devotees, right? So if among the devatas it's the devotional aspect, so then the devotees are the actual point. So the devatas, because they're surrendered to the Lord, they're known as devotees. So when they're acting in that capacity, then he reciprocates very nicely in that way. When they're not acting in that capacity, they're doing something foolish, then the Lord, you know, is neutral towards them. You know, and then according to the modes that they're working with, then they're going to get their result, their particular results. So then the question comes, so why don't the demons then follow the devotees since the Lord is pleased there? And then it meant they have no taste because of Rajas and Tamas. So that causes extreme rejection of the Lord. Then the next one. But it is inappropriate for the Lord to punish them constantly. Right? You know, why is he constantly punishing them? You know, why not sometimes someone else? And the answer is then the reconciliation. That is not so. The Lord has fame spread everywhere. Uru Shrava. He gives them mercy also, as in the case of Putana, Srimad Bhagavatam 3.2.23 and others. Inimical kings like Shishupal, Pandraka, and Shalva, while they were lying down, sitting, or engaging in other activities, enviously meditated upon the bodily movements of the Lord, his sporting pastimes and his loving glances. Being thus always absorbed in Krishna, they achieve positions in the spiritual world. What then can be said of the benedictions offered to those who constantly fix their minds on Lord Krishna in a favorable, loving mood? Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.48. So he also shows them the favor, but they're absorbed like that. And so then naturally they go. Anucheta 104. So we see as a person, he interacts with those who personally deal with him. Anucheta 104. Having shown the conclusive truth, Sukadev relates a particular story concerning mercy to Prahlad, Jaya, and Vijaya, as an example of the Lord fulfilling the role of acting only for giving mercy to the devotees. Formerly, when Maharaj Yudhishthira was performing the Rajasuya sacrifice, Narada responded to his inquiry, recited a story in this connection, Srimad Bhagavatam 7.1.13. Riti, the current Adhikaran has proved that the Supreme Lord is beyond any prejudice or cruelty. The Lord appears in this world primarily to reciprocate with his devotees and protection of the universe, which is done through his Maya Shakti as a secondary action. Even the actions of the Lord, such as punishing the demons, are ultimately beneficial to them because it gets rid of their envious mentality. Hence, the Lord is devoid of any favoritism or hatred, and all the actions of time, such as creation, maintenance, and destruction, follow the Lord and supports the Lord's action of performing his pastimes. The next Adhikarana further extols the glories of Bhagavan, who showers his mercy upon everyone like a rain cloud. The scripture, which explains the nature and characteristics of Bhagavan to the greatest possible extent, is Srimad Bhagavatam. Thus, by analyzing Bhagavatam according to the six principles of interpretation, Tatparyalinga, the position of Bhagavan as the chief form of the Absolute is irrefutably established in the next Adhikarana. Okay, so that ended that Adhikarana. Okay. Adhikarana 3. Bhagavan establishes the highest aspect of the Absolute Truth through analysis of Bhagavatam according to Tatparya Nimas. Anuchedas 105 to 110. Adhikarana Prakashika. Having reason that the Lord is not partial or against any living entity in the material world, the current Adhikarana further proves the unchallengeable supremacy of the Lord by asserting his position as the source and shelter of everything that exists. The supremacy of Bhagavan is very vividly described in Srimad Bhagavatam. And thus, by analyzing Bhagavatam according to the six principles of interpretation, Tatparyalingas, one can easily discern that Bhagavan is the highest form of absolute truth. The six principles are enunciated in the following verse by Madhvacharya. In understanding the meaning of a particular passage, the means are upakrama, initial statement, upasamhara, concluding statement, abhyasa, repetition, apurvata, uniqueness, phalam, result, artavada, praise, and upapatti, reasoning. Quoted by Madhva in his commentary on Brahma Sutra 1147. Right, so these are standard things. They may have come, maybe Jaimini Muni may have been the one that revealed them. But the principle is that these are always working. You know, so it's just like logic. Everyone uses the logic as Gotama gave it. It's not that, oh, Gotama is not a pure devotee, so why do we follow that? No, the Lord reveals through the different sages all these different kind of understandings. And then their philosophy, during the explanation of their philosophy, then these points will come up. And so then, so this is then what everybody uses here. So you see is Gotama's Nyaya system, and this point here, the Tatparya Lingas. Then these are, so they're all Vedic things. It's just that these particular personalities, it's not that they create them. They just focus on them and bring them to the front and make it a major part of their discussions. So, but they're all coming in the Vedic literatures. The initial verse of Bhagavatam, starting with Janmadyasya, instructs one to meditate on Bhagavan, the highest aspects of the Absolute, which concurs with the statements of Brahma Sutras and Gayatri Mantra. And the final verse, which states that the chanting of the holy names of the Lord is the highest form of meditation, perfectly corroborate with the initial verse, right? So we see is the opening verse and the last verse. Then they're talking about meditate upon Bhagavan, and that the end was about chanting the glories of the holy name, and that's the perfectional stage of life. So then those both go, like you said, the opening statement and the concluding statement. Also, the supreme glory of the Lord is repeatedly described throughout the Bhagavatam. So that's constantly. You see every set of prayers, anytime anyone's dealing, then Sukadeva is always mentioning about his special position. And his scripture is uniquely distinguished among all the Vedic literatures for extolling the glories of Bhagavan to the utmost extent. The result of hearing or reciting Bhagavatam is that one gets purified of all sins, and bhakti towards the Lord appears, right? So that's the result, right? The phalam. So uniqueness is that you see, we're seeing here is the Bhagavatam is always glorifying the Lord more than any other literature. Other literatures are referring to the Lord, but they may not be as direct, or even if they are direct, it's not as often that they're direct. But Bhagavatam is constantly, all it is direct. It doesn't do anything else. So that's very unique, right? Then the benefits. And in all the sections of Bhagavatam, Bhagavan is praised by the demigods and sages through various Vedic hymns and also by the yogis, eulogize him as the chief goal of the meditating process. Right, so they're always offering prayers. Like the prayers are very famous in the Bhagavatam. One can also discern the supremacy of Bhagavan by reasoning. First, the jiva can be inferred by observable intelligence, and then Paramatma is inferred as the seer of all the jivas by conclusive reasoning. Next, Bhagavan is provisionally inferred by his amsha, Antaryami. Since Antaryami cannot be concluded as the final being by the following logic. The Lord enters with all his amsas into the jivas instead of just a portion of his whole self, for showing his power as Antaryami. Then he could not be the Lord, since he would no longer be complete. Right? So he's he's complete. He's entered into everything. Because otherwise, if only a portion is there, then the thing, he'd be incomplete. So it's that's the thing. When he expands, he's still complete. So that's why then the Vedic, we have the 1 + 1 = 1, 1 - 1 = 1. You know, he's always on that position of completeness, of purdom. Thus, by analyzing Bhagavatam according to the six principles of interpretation, Aryalingas, the position of Bhagavan as the chief form of the Absolute is irrefutably established. Anucheda 105, right? Because we remember that he's established Bhagavan as the topmost literature already in the Tattva Siddhartha, right? Because you have the Veda, the Vedas. Well, of the Vedas is the Upanishads, right? And then we see the Upanishads are there. They explain the absolute truth. But at the same time, as we see then, so then you know, as a approach, then we have the, I say, the essence of all the Upanishads, because there's so many Upanishads. I mean, there's the 10 main Upanishads, but there's also then hundreds of Upanishads, actually. Some of them are very short. So then the essence of that is given in Vedanta Sutra. And then we see is that as far as presentation goes, you have the Vedas, you have the Upanishads, you have the Sutras, but the best form of presentation is Puranic. Because of there, by the histories in that, then people can see nicely what other individuals have done, how they've come to the perfectional platform, how they've developed their love for the Lord through service. And so it's a superior presentation. And then you have that the Bhagavatam is in the Puranic format, but as an explanation, the natural commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. So in other words, the essence of the Vedas is known in its best in its Puranic form as the Bhagavatam. Right? So the essence as the Upanishads, the essence as the Vedanta Sutra, you may or may not understand, but the essence as the Srimad Bhagavatam, that you'll understand. You know, that's accessible. Anucheda 105. All aspects of unequal treatment and cruelty in the Lord have been rejected. The Lord should be viewed like a rain cloud which sprinkles water everywhere. The inherent meaning is conferred by the arguments in the Brahma Sutras. Vaishamya Nair Grinye Na Sapekshatvat Tatahi Darshayati. The Lord is neither prejudiced nor cruel because bodies are created according to karma. Scripture shows this, Brahma Sutra 2.134. So the body you have, the situation you're in, you know, the facilities you have, those are all then created in terms of according to karma. Whatever is your karma, that's how your gross and subtle body will then be manifest, and the situation in which you are manifest. Right? So that's going to be from there. So it's not about the Lord. He's not prejudiced or cruel. It's that you've done like this. This is what you get. It's the rule. You know? I mean, you could say it's no, but why it should be like that? Why can't you adjust it? Would you like it that you go into the shop and, you know, you go to buy something? You know, you take out your 10 rupees. Oh, sorry, it's 100 rupees today. You know? You wouldn't like that. You know, you would be very happy if something for 100 rupees, you hand them 100 rupees and say, no, today it's only 10. That way, but if it's the other way, you'll say no. So that's the thing, is we're making a, how you say, an argument, you know, or a bringing up a doubt about the Lord being equal, but we're not equal. You know, when everything's going good, we're not complaining, oh, you know, why did the Lord make everything so nice? It's only when there's a problem, oh, why does Krishna allow this? I'm a devotee. But the point is, he's supposed to give up pious and impious. So when we get the results of piety, we're very happy with it and don't blame the Lord. When we get the results of impiety, oh, now it's the Lord's fault. Right? You know, so that's the point is here. So the bodies are just created according to the karma. That's all. You have a better body, it's because of your karma. You have a worse body, it's because of the karma. Okay. Thus, Brahman, Bhagavan, and Paramatma have been described. These are three forms. Sometimes the four forms, Vasudeva, Sankarsha, Prajumna, and Aniruddha, are seen. This difference is not incorrect, since some persons explain in terms of non-difference, and others explain in terms of difference. This is explained in the Moksha Dharma of Narayaniya. Eka vyuha vibhago va kvachid dvi vyuha samgita. Tri vyuhas chapi sangyatas chatur vyuhas chadrishyate. Sometimes the Lord is defined as one and sometimes as two. Sometimes he is counted as three and sometimes seen as four. Mahabharata 12:3-6:53. Yeah, so depending upon what you're describing, he's as one or as two, him and his energy, so as three, then as Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. At four, then the Chaturvyuha. Shruti says, Ekada bhavati dvidha bhavati. The Lord is one and the Lord is two. Chandogya Upanishad 7:26:2. Yeah. You also see that in the, what do you call it? In the Talmud, and there's you have Adonai, and you have Elohim, and you have Echad. So you have many, or the two, and you have one. So the same kind of principle. It's considered the main teaching within the work. But generally, people don't get into the philosophy. Chandogya Upanishad 7:26:2. Of the three forms which are not contrary to the four forms mentioned, the chief is Bhagavan, the first form. Since Bhagavan is extensively portrayed in Bhagavatam, the scripture is given this name. It is said, Imam Bhagavatam Nama Puranam Brahma Samhitam. The Supreme Lord Vyas wrote the greatest and most auspicious Purana called Bhagavatam, which bestows all human goals and is non-different from the Vedas. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:3-40. The meaning of Bhagavan can be analyzed using the six principles. Upakramo Pasham Parav Abhyaso Puravata Phalam Artavado Papati Cha Lingam Tatparya Nirnaye. In understanding the meaning of a particular passage, the means are upakrama, upasamhara, abhyasa, apuravata, phalam, artabad, and upapakti, quoted by Madhva in his commentary in Brahma Sutra 1:147. The upakrama and upasamhara of Bhagavatam are the same. Let us meditate on the highest form of Bhagavan. Krishna, who is the cause of creation, maintenance, and destruction of this universe, as the material and efficient cause, since he is the only knower of all objects and the only independent being, who revealed the Vedas to Brahma within his mind, who is difficult to understand even for the learned, in whose body the universe made of senses, sense objects, and devatas is produced and is real, and who destroys illusion by his swoop shakti, Srimad Bhagavatam 1:1. I meditate upon that pure, spotless Narayana, who is free from suffering and death, and who previously revealed this incomparable lamp of knowledge to Brahma. Brahma then spoke it to the sage Narada, who narrated it to Krishna Dvaitpayana Vyas. Srila Vyas revealed this Bhagavatam to the greatest of sages, Sukadev Goswami and Sukadev Goswami. And Sukadev mercifully spoke it to Maharaj Parikrama. Srimad Bhagavatam 12:13-19. The meaning of the last verse is the same as the first verse. Meaning of the first verse. So you also have meaning of the last verse, or it's just it's the same. Yeah, no. We have a section that they're explaining the last verse. This is a section where he breaks it down syllable by syllable?
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay.
The first verse. Last verse is just given summary purpose.
Okay.
Last verse is not explained like that. First verse only is like syllabus.
Okay, explained like that. Then he has the sarva sambandhi. Okay. So it's a serious explanation. Yeah, basically on this point. Meaning of the first verse. Garuda Puran says, Arto ya Brahma Sutranam. Bhagavatam gives the meaning of the Brahma Sutras. Since Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on the Brahma Sutras, the Bhagavatam will first be explained in terms of the Brahma Sutras. Okay, so since it's giving the natural commentary, so according to the Brahma Sutras, then it will be explained in that way. So he'll show from different angles. Atato Brahma Jigyasa, Brahma Sutra 111, is explained in the last two lines of the first verse. Though placed at the end of the Bhagavatam verse, the statement explains the first sutra. Since it is the grammatically the first part of the statements. Since it is the grammatically or according to grammar. Or since it is grammatically, maybe take out the grammatically. Since it is grammatically the first part. Brahma Jigyasa is explained with Param Dhimahi. We should meditate on Bhagavan, Param, by taking the etymological meaning of Brahma in Brahma Jigyasa to mean the greatest, that which includes everything. In the Bhagavatam verse, Param should mean Brahman in the highest sense, different from impersonal Brahman, Bhagavan. The word Brahma in Brahma Sutra is explained as Param, supreme, in the first verse of Bhagavatam in order to show that Bhagavan is the root form, like the sun in relation to its rays. Bhagavan, by his nature, is superior to or different from Param, everything else. In Bhagavatam, Bhagavan alone is regarded as supreme, since the Purusha forms, Paramatma, are expansions, and impersonal Brahman lacks qualities, form, and action found in Bhagavan. Ramanuja says the following. Well, the word Brahma means that which is endowed with the qualities of greatness in all places. Greatness means having no limit at all to qualities by one's nature. That is the main meaning. That indicates only the Supreme Lord, Shivasya 111, right? Because it's just establishing the supreme personality of Godhead, right? Because otherwise, when you say Brahma, the Mayavadis make it that, oh, that means Brahman. No, Brahma means spirit. So when we're talking about he's the greatest, then the point is that then being the greatest in spirit, that's Bhagavan. Because these other aspects then, you know, don't have manifest all the different specialness that is there in Bhagavan. The Prajetas say, na nyantas tvad vibhutinam so ananta iti giyase. You are glorified as ananta because you have no limit to your powers expressed in other forms. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:30-31. This verse indicates that though there are various unlimited attractive forms, the Lord has a most astonishing chief form, Krishna, which is the shelter of all these other forms. Being established by this as having a form, Bhagavan is thus proved to be Vishnu and similar forms, since the Vishnu forms are shown to be superior to Brahma and Shiva. The word jigyasa, okay, so that takes it through, you know, Brahman as the greatest, then you have all the great personalities, all the great things that are there, but those all are coming from the Lord, so that makes it, that brings out the most important aspect. Yeah. The word jigyasa is now explained to be the equivalent of we should meditate, dhimahi, right? So if you said atato brahma jigyasa, And so here is showing his jivyasas, and so we're showing here the timahi. This is showing the opening and the ending. So even within the first verse, you see the opening and the ending are confirming the same thing. You know, let alone then all the way at the end of the book, that the verse that is given there. Since the purport of inquiring into Brahman is to meditate upon him. That is, if you're inquiring, that means you're absorbed in Brahman. This is stated by the Lord in 11th canto. If one is absorbed in Vedic scriptures concerning Brahman, but not absorbed in meditating on the Supreme Lord, the result of one's efforts is nullified. He is like a person who, desiring milk, maintains a cow which does not bear calf. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:11-18. Right? So it has to be, you have to see it all the way through to the Lord. Otherwise, if you just take that absorbed in Brahman, that you don't meditate upon the Lord, then you actually won't progress. So in these things where in the Vedic literatures, even those people who are impersonalists, then they follow the Vedic aspect where you are absorbed in, meditating upon Vishnu. But they take it as it's a lower thing because it's just helping me do what we're doing. They don't understand this. No, you're going for a lower goal. So it's only by meditating on the highest goal, then this lower goal becomes easily attainable. Otherwise, the Lord is unattainable by the jiva through mental speculation or any other process. So it's only through devotion. So then if they just speculate on the Lord, they'll never understand. But if they have devotion and meditate on the Lord, then they'll be able to appreciate Brahman because the Lord has to reveal himself. Turn the page, no? Yes. According to Ramanuja, the word timahi is the same as jigyasa, since jigyasa means repeated meditation. This means that this scripture named Bhagavatam, the essence of all the Vedas, accepts as its very principle that we should meditate on this highest form of Bhagavan. Timahi is in the plural, we should meditate, to indicate that everyone in all times and places must necessarily meditate on Bhagavan, whose amshas are the Purushas, and who acts as Antayami of infinite universes. By this action, one person meditating on another, the Vartavad, based on the existence of only one conscious being, is denied in this work. All right, so Dhimahi, we should meditate. So we're meditating, there's all of us, on the Supreme. So you see is that by the we, then we can't say that we bring it to oneness. Meditating must be understood to mean that the Lord has formed. Since it becomes easy to meditate on a form and with an easy method of attaining a goal, what is difficult to practice becomes automatically less attractive. Giving no inclination to man. As well, the worship of the form of the Lord is considered the best. Okay, so just by saying that you're meditating upon means it's a form, because you can't meditate on nothing. Because even you say, oh no, but the Mayavadis, the Buddhists and all that, they meditate on nothing. They never meditate on nothing. There's no such thing as nothing. You know? So then the point is then they stare at a wall, they stare at a candle, you know, then they chant Om and they meditate on that. They use something. There's no question they're not engaging the senses in some kind of form. They're just not acknowledging the ultimate form of the Lord. And then the one who worships the form of the Lord, they're the best. I consider those who absorb the minds of me, who constantly desire to associate with me, and who with firm faith worship me, to be the quickest to attain me. But those who worship the Atma, which is indescribable by words, beyond the senses, pervading the body, inconceivable, unchanging in form, unmoving and fixed, by completely subduing their senses, looking on all world things, all things equally, and being intent on the welfare of all, attain me alone. Those who attach to the formless encounter extreme difficulties. Concentrating on the invisible formless being brings suffering to those who have bodies. Bhagavad Gita 12, 3, 5. Because you can't do it. It's always going to be a problem. You're going to be in anxiety. There's nothing to focus on, so the mind's not inspired. The mind not being inspired, therefore, then you get bored and you get, you know, disturbed. And so then it just creates trouble. Brahma describes this. Oh Lord, if fools give up bhakti, the all-inclusive path, and suffer to attain realization of Atma without bhakti, they simply attain suffering and nothing else. They are like fools who beat empty husks. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.4. Right, so they're somehow or another, they, you know, due to the lack of taste, and so they won't take up because of these other desires, these other actions, then they can't understand the Lord because he can only be understood through devotion. And therefore, then someone should situate themselves in devotion. They can appreciate. And those who don't, then they, you know, what will they get? You know, just like if you beat, if husks are already been, the patty has been taken out, if you beat them again, you won't get anything more. You just put in your effort. Nothing to gain. It has been proven that the highest form, Swayam, the Bhagavan, Krishna, is the object of meditation, not Shiva or others. Should meditate in the potential mood indicates a prayer to meditate. Without looking at any other process, we must meditate. The verb meditate indicates worship of the Lord, repeated by represented by meditation. Since Bhagavan is the highest goal worthy of worship, it reveals the natural position of the highest form of Bhagavan. Right, so you should meditate as on the form, and that the Swayam, that the original, and then from that comes all the other expansions, because you see all these others are explained. It also indicates that Swayam Bhagavan has the most attractive form. Vedanan Sama Vedo Smi. Of the Vedas, I, Krishna, am the Sama. Bhagavad Gita 20:22. Vyad Sama Tata Sam Nam. Of the Samas, I, Krishna, am the Vyad Sama. Bhagavad Gita 10:35. The Vyad Sama says, the Lord has a spiritual body. He is greater than anything made of earth. He is greater than the sky and greater than the heavens. He is a spiritual abode. He is more beautiful than any great or beautiful object. Right, so this is of the Vedas, then he is the Sama of the Sama, he is the Brihat Sama. And then this is what's being said there. Thus the words Brahma Jigyasa explained as Param Timahi, worship of Swayam Bhagavan. Now the phrase Atata will be explained to the equivalent of the word Satyam in the Bhagavatam verse. Oh, like that. Okay, so Param Dhimahi, Satyam Param Dhimahi. Okay. In the since the word Atta follows after the word Ataha, follows after the word Atta. Atta has a causative meaning because of this. Atta then means after understanding all about karma by Purva Mimamsa in Karmakanda previously studied. Ataha then means, and after that, because of some statements after studying, gathering the meaning to some extent, studying the Uttaramimamsa philosophy and Brahma Kanda, after being purified with sattva, characterized by qualities like peacefulness from karmas. Since the non-contradictory parts of karma are helpful, and since there is necessary dependence of karma and jnana, after concluding that Uttaramimamsa is the object of study from understanding the arguments of Purvamimamsa. So that's all that is the meaning of a ta-ta. So you put those two together means after studying these both, then you come to this understanding. So it's nice, it's that means, and he's going in, you know, he'll go through all these different things. on what it is there, but that's the point. They can explain it down each, you know, each syllable down to its dhatu, how it gets out, how it expands, and how it does all these things. There all are right. other Yes.
So we see, like, by the explanation of Acharyas here, the Vedic conclusion is all about realization. It's not about the information, how much you have, because this conclusion cannot be obtained without that realization after studying the scriptures in a under, like, you know, bona fide authority.
Yes, yes. Yeah, because the speculative, it means that it's then up to you. So if the understanding of the spring depends upon your ability and knowledge and grammar and logic, then, you know, that brings the supreme down to kind of a more meager position. It means one considers I'm more smart than others, so therefore, by my analyzation, I can understand God. But that's basically just puffing ourselves up, you know, and bringing God down, you know, trying to meet in the middle. But God being beyond these things, since he's beyond the senses, which includes the mind, then he can't be analyzed according to these things. If you follow the scripture, then yes, you can get some understanding. You can apply analyzation according to what the scriptures give. But that analyzation then is in the context of appreciating how to serve, or how to meditate upon the Lord, how to be absorbed in meditation. Because we think of meditation the way of yoga, just like when we think of Brahman, and we think of the impersonal from the you know, the Mayavadis. So that's what we're used to. We're used to all these definitions being taken in a non-personal from aspect. But actually, then if you're meditating upon the person, then you're going to perform actions in relationship between yourself and that person, right? As servant, then we're going to apply that as servant, you know. So that's the point. It has to be a practical application of service. Otherwise, then there's no actual meaning, right? But they try to misconstrue these aspects out of the words by using grammar and their speculation, and then more technical things they can come up, the more it seems to be in line, then they think it's great. You know, they have some scars based on certain modes, and then they try to put the arguments according to that, and people who can be affected by those modes, then they'll find them very attractive. Right, because if you take Mayavad, straight Mayavad philosophy, you say it, most people won't be fine. How it was written. You can still hear us, or just said our internet is unstable.
Yes, Maharaj, and mine also. It's breaking up a little bit in between, but I think it's fine.
Okay. There are the following statements. Yad yateha karma chito loka shiyante evam evamutra punya chito loka shiyate. Just as places attained as a result of actions in this life perish, places in the future life attained by pious activities of this life are also destroyed. Chandogya Upanishad 8.16. Ataya iha atmanam anuvidya rajantyetam cha satyan kamas tesham sarveshu lokeshu kama chado bhavati. Those persons who depart from here, while knowing atma and true desirable objects, wander at will in all the worlds. Chandogya Upanishad 8.16. Na cha punar avar tate, he does not return. Chandogya Upanishad 8.15.1. Sa cha nantyaya kalpate, he is qualified for eternal life. Svetasuktara Upanishad 5.9. Niranjana paramam samyam upayati. The pure jiva attains likeness with the Supreme Lord, Mundaka Upanishad 3.13. Idam jnanam upasaritya mama sadharmyam agata. Sargepi no pajayante pralaye na vya tan ticha. Those who have attained qualities similar to mine, by realizing this knowledge through Guru, do not take rebirth in this world and do not experience pain at the time of death. Yeah. These two systems are described in Ramanuja's commentaries. It is said that karma, known from the Mimamsa, understood from the first part of the Vedas, gives very temporary results, right? That's why I said, as you see, facilities you get in this life are temporary and they eventually are destroyed. Same if you go to the heavenly planets, there, whatever you attain there, it will also be destroyed. You know, it might take a little longer, but it will be destroyed. Just like, let's say you live in a house and that house goes, you know, nicely for 30 years, then it starts falling apart and all that, you know, and then you have to do, you know, overhaul and this and that, and eventually it falls apart. So even if the house that you live in, you know, lasts for 3,000 years, but the point is if you're there, you're living for 10,000, it's still falling apart and you still have to fix it, right? So in any case, whatever it is, even if it's a longer time, but it's still the same problem. You have the same problem. You know, you buy a cheap goods, they break very quickly. But you buy expensive goods, they also break. It just takes longer. And, okay, it said that Brahma Jnana, understood from the latter portion of the Vedas, gives unlimited permanent results. It is said that after learning karma in the first part, Atta, one should then understand Brahman. The first commentator, Baudhyayana, has said, one should know Brahman after understanding karma. Right, because for most people, they go through the karma, and only as they are going through it, then they start to understand that, you know, the temporary nature of things and how it's not so important. Like that. You know, so if you see someone without doing that directly goes towards, you know, the detachment and all that, just means they've already done that in a previous life. But it's otherwise, it's through action that you see is that this action doesn't give any satisfaction. So what does give satisfaction? And, you know, who are we that we're looking for satisfaction, right? Because we think eternal, the body's temporary, we think satisfied, we can't please the senses, you know. So then who is that person who is wondering these things, right? And then ultimately, then who's the supreme person who is in control of all these things? Because we as the individual person, we try our best to control and it doesn't work. Right, but then when we adjust things, then we find that it works very nicely. Right? In the story of Paranjan, on the meaning of the words Pitrihu, invoking the Pitris, and Devahu, invoking the Lord, which are names for the right and left ears, make this conclusion clear. Oh, so that's why, because it said that when you receive the mantra, transcendental mantra, I think it's through the left ear. So the right must be the Pitris, the left must be the Lord. After understanding karmakanda completely, after understanding the unsteady nature and untimely sorrowful nature of the bliss of Swarga, by considering it objectively from some of the words of Brahmakanda, knowing truthfully that Brahman is the highest permanent bliss becomes the cause of inquiry about Brahman. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's by hearing about these things, you're working with the material and then you're seeing the temporary results and you see the other is eternal and that gives an eternal results, then you start to wonder about Brahman. You start to want to inquire about that because you're looking for something more than temporary results. Having gained the correct meaning of atataha, then after studying karma and looking for permanent results, the corresponding meaning is found in the word satyam of the Bhagavatam verse. Satyam means unchanging existence under all conditions. In combination with param, it expresses the meaning of Brahman found in the Shruti text, satyam jnanam anantam brahma. Brahman is eternal existence, unlimited and full of knowledge, Taittiriya Upanishad 2.1.3. This means that everything else has temporary existence, since its existence depends upon his will. Until now, we have meditated on something with no temporary existence. Now, however, we should meditate on what permanently exists. Satyam param timahi tato brahmajivyasa. So we see is that they're giving these two, they're the same thing, but you see, difference will be, means they're the same, but one is bringing out the position, one is bringing out the conclusion. Right? Means this is the position of, and this is what you should do. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why then you'll see is that these aspects that you should meditate upon, that means the practical application of accepting the supremacy of the Lord. Right? You're always going to have this. So that's why in the logical syllogism, then you're opening with the thesis. You're going to close with the thesis, but you're going to close with the thesis now that people are appreciating it. That now how you practically apply that for actually the actual benefit, what's the natural position? So then those two come. And then in between, you're simply dealing with doubts and reconciliation and that's or opposition and then conclusions and you know things like this. So it's the same kind of a point. If somebody asks, well, how does this, like you see there's questions on, okay, but if this is there, but what about this? And so there's a doubt. And so then those are cleared. Opposition means, no, there's an attachment. So then that needs a stronger argument. You know, it's like you say the one, you give an example or things like that. The other one, then you have to actually remove the position of the other. Like, you know, it's in the wrong position. Where does it actually go? In other words, if I'm dealing with something that is a misgiving, I have to show that what you're looking for is actually within what's already being stated. And so you have to dismantle this misgiving by showing that, no, it's already been dealt with. You know, you're getting, you know, maybe attached to the words or this or that or something like that. But no, it's already being adjusted.
Maharaj?
Yes.
The other day, Devarshipra was asking about the practical application aspect. After the Panchanga Nyaya, we have, like, within our SS, we follow the whole Panchanga Nyaya, then we write an extra practical application point. So, but this practical application is within the process of our bhakti because it's the process is abhideya. So the practical application should be inherent in one sense. It's not like some point of logic like that.
No. It's inherent because you see the existence of things, the willpower and qualities and application of those qualities through that willpower, and then getting results that are experienced and shared in the experience. Those are inherent in one thing. You know, because we're used to that three different things are three different things. But on the spiritual platform, they're three different things, but they're one thing. You know, that's why I said, you know, when you eat, then the taste is there, the nourishment is there, and the satisfaction is there, right? Because you're eating because, you know, you're hungry. And so the hunger means you're going to be attracted to those things that are nutritious for your particular situation. You know what I'm saying? And so then you're eating that, so you have the taste for that because and it's providing the nutrients you need. But it's also the hunger is being removed. So all these are happening at once by one process of eating. Right? So we don't necessarily analyze it to that degree, but that's actually what's going on. So the three features are all features of one thing. So Sat, Chit, Ananda are three features of one thing. You know, Krishna's Swarup. Because existence is there. And so in existence, then there's how you say that existence then has all its qualities, its uniqueness and, you know, what it can do, what results it can gain and everything like that. And then applying that, then there's going to be the experience that's gained from that. You know, that happiness that's gained. So they all go together. So when you talk about an object, it exists, it has uniqueness, it has a purpose, you know, and it has, you know, what it can be, you know, and it has an action, right, that can gain that purpose. So the all those go together, and that's what then you define as an object, right? So whether you're dividing it as three, whether you're dividing it as four, like the last one was the chapter Vyuha, whether you're dividing it as two, as Krishna and his energies, or just one as the Supreme Lord, you know, who's the controller of, you know, all and like this. So, and, you know, so in any case, however you're dealing with, the variety is inherent, like we saw, Satva includes the variety, you know, because it's all part of the pastimes with the devotees. That's the whole point. So the pastimes means there's an existence. It means that there's an action. And it means there's an experience. So they're all three there. So you can analyze the three, but the point is when you're applying yourself in the pastime, you don't have to analyze them there, right? Not from the platform of tattva like we're doing. They may go through and analyze different aspects of rasa and how it's moving and all that is if it's favorable for the pastime. You know, like you see sometimes then and discussions in the pastime, then they'll talk about how someone's shy or, you know, some other things like that and, you know, like that. Or you have, you know, how you say, there's that one pastime mentioned in Nectar Devotion where, I think, can't remember what is the basis of it, where it's coming, but Krishna's complaining to the other gopis, you know, about why is Radharani so boldly coming so near my face and smelling my face to see, you know, what's been either eaten or something like that. You know, so you're analyzing different moods and all that. So there'll be all these different layers of things that are happening. So this analyzation has use in the pastime for enhancing the taste that they're gaining in the pastime. Like we're analyzing just to figure out how it works and you know, and so we can tell the difference because, you know, it's like, remember, it was like, I think it was last year or year before, then, you know, a question comes up, well, what's the difference between Rati and Prema? Because we'll take them as the same thing. But Rati just means that attraction, that attachment for Krishna. Prema is and then the particular experience of that particular attraction. You know, so that rasa, you know, then how that's appreciated. You know, the rasa means when all the five aspects of bhava are together, that's rasa. But otherwise, if you just are analyzing one at a time, you're dealing with tattva. But when they all are working together, that's rasa. So these kind of things, then you know, you understand more and more is how one thing can be everything. Then how in that one, then there's three main features that can then influence everything. And everything's based on three features, you know? And then within those, so does that make sense? You know, so you always have, there's Krishna and then there's Krishna and his energies. And from that, you can explain everything. From Krishna, you can explain everything. From Krishna's energies, you can explain everything. From these three features of Satchitananda, you can explain everything. And then you add in the chapter Vyuha, where you have these three features, but when you apply them into pastimes, then you can have, that's how you get four, Vasudeva, then means performing that pastime, right, in that context. Does that make sense? You know, and so then you can also get the Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. So in there, then you can say, yes, performing all the activities of Vasudeva, but it means without his energies being manifest. You just see him himself as the controller of the energies. But then as Bhagavan, then he's with his internal potency and that. So that's where you're going to get the difference there. Does that make sense? So everything comes back to these. So you can always explain them on all these. So depending on how what you're trying to bring out, you'll discuss him as one, two, three, or four.
Yes, Maharaj. Yes, sometimes I always get question on this aspect of practical application from the devotees. Basically, as you said, the understanding of even the practical application is seen on the situation point, on the what situation point of view, or position point of view, rather than on the application itself.
Yes, yes. We'll take it because it's thought. If I have a nice car, everything's accomplished. But it's only if you use the car, then there's some accomplishment. You know, so we can talk about the glories of having the car, but unless you use it. So that's the difference. One is what's the position of it and what's the application of it. Because if you have the position of it, that's there. Position means it will be applied and experienced. So that means the first part will be more about the position. The last part will be about the application and experience. Because also you saw before it was when I think it was being described that the Hladini, in one sense, is an expansion, is a further aspect of the Sambit. Right? It means that performing action, you'll get an experience. Right, but we know from that the experience is the main thing. That's what it's all about. So if you put it into that, then that you see is that therefore Lalita is the senior, and Radharani is junior. You know, but they're the same. You know, within the age limit is so close that they're considered equals. But you have that aspect where Lalita can kind of be the boss, but it's all about Radharani. You know, just like Nityananda Prabhu or Balaram are the senior, but it's all about Krishna. You know, and then Vasudev and that, or what we see in the way of the Dvaitacharya, then it's all about Nityananda and Vajitanya. So even though the senior goes up, but it's still about the other aspects. So that Radharani, so she's the Sarup Shakti, she takes the principle of just being that pleasure aspect of Krishna, because that's the essence, you know, that devotion and everything like that. And then you have this situational. So Yogamaya then arranges everything. It sets things up so that then devotees can take part in action that is used to please Krishna. Right? The three aren't separate, but you know, like Sambit, Sandini, and Ladini, they're all part of the Sarup Shakti. So we analyze it so we understand and appreciate. But in the spirit, when one's performing, the devotee is in the spiritual world performing the pastimes, they don't need to analyze it. They just taste it. Right? You know, just like let's say I have cooked something very nicely. Right, you know, then offer, then you invite the devotees there eating. And so they don't have to analyze what it is. They can just taste. Right? And that. And so then you can analyze. But having tasted, now you can analyze. So then those who understand taste they can generally analyze what it is better than those who can't, don't have the taste. You know, someone goes, oh, it's nice, but others can taste the whole range and then explain, oh, it's this or this and that, and so many things like that. So that's why you see the acharyas, for them, the analyzation is very easy because they are tasting. Right, but because we look at it that no, if you have all these things automatically, the taste is there, therefore we go through like that. But if you try to analyze something before you've tasted it, like I give you something to eat and say, analyze this, what is it, has it made? You can go by, you know, what you know, your knowledge, you know, of what it could be, but there can be tastes and all that and combinations and proportions that you don't necessarily know. Right, so those who taste, they can easily analyze. But those who are analyzed may not know the taste. Yeah. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare, Jai Srila Prabhupada.